And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where it's Friday. The NBA is finally back. Had a semi-fun six-game Thursday night. And finally joining me for a podcast that I've been wanting to do for the last 3 weeks, ESPN's Knicks slash other NBA teams, because the Knicks are so terrible, expert Ian Begley. How you doing?
Zach, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm surviving.
How was the break?
It was great.
Yeah. Also, you look refreshed.
I'm a little bit refreshed.
Okay. You're as refreshed as you can be with a three-year-old at home?
Four. Just turned four. She turned four over the break.
Happy birthday.
She had a big, big birthday. She's having a big birthday party this weekend. It's a little bit out of hand, actually.
They always are.
A lot of guests.
Pony?
Oh, no. I'm not one of those people. Where it's like, here's a room with some children
right.
and some food and some alcohol. Because you can't throw a toddler birthday party without alcohol.
No. Yeah, that would be horrendous.
It's rude, actually. It's hostile. It's hostile.
Will there be a guitar player?
No music, no animals, just some games and toys for them to... They're on their own.
That's all they do.
So you go figure out... They're like wild animals in the zoo. Just go figure out what you want to do.
We'll be at the bar.
Yeah. So I've been wanting to do this podcast for literally 3 weeks.
Right.
And then... the trade deadline happened, which was like another week of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the flu.
Yeah.
Which is no joke.
Not fun.
No one should be around anybody who gets the flu.
Not fun. And we actually talked about maybe doing it because I thought I would be better. And you said, no, it's not going to happen.
Can't be around me. Can't be around me. And you definitely shouldn't be in NBA locker rooms if you have the flu.
No, and I'm sure I got it from somebody either at the Barclays Center or at the Garden, because, you know, the day after a game, I started to feel it, and then boom, it hit me. So I was quarantined.
And then All-Star happened.
Yeah.
And now we're here.
Here we are.
Now, what happened 3 weeks ago, the Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis, Tim Hardaway Jr., Courtney Lee for Dennis Smith, two future first-round picks.
Trey Burke, forgot about
Trey Burke, longtime Nick, once a Nick, always a Nick. And did I forget someone coming back too? I think that's it.
We got Dennis Smith Jr., Wes Matthews,
DJ, longtime Nick DJ, that's
yes.
right.
Yes.
KD's friend,
there
coincidentally. It was the most interesting trade at the deadline.
Right.
It happened a week before the deadline, there about 6 days before, whatever it was. And it ended up being the most interesting trade. So I've been wanting – very few people in this world are as plugged into their beat as you are. And so there was one person I wanted to talk to about what in the hell happened. It was you. And so and then we'll talk about some other Knicks things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some other teams too, because the Knicks have lost 17?
They got to win before the break.
Who they beat?
They beat Atlanta.
That's right. That's right. On the very night before. That was a sorry ass set of games. The Thursday before the break used to be like there'd be a couple marquee
there
games.
There was a good game. Yeah.
This was like, what happened?
They whimpered into the All-Star break.
Oh, my God. That's right. They beat the Hawks. So their 17-game losing streak is over. Congratulations to the Knicks. Big stuff. So if you had to boil down the Porzingis trade, the why.
Yeah.
It's impossible. It's really not fair to ask you to boil it down to one thing because a lot of reasons are intertwined. But, like, what is the most important reason that they did this, in your view?
Just the lack of commitment from him and the idea that he didn't want to be here long term. And I think once they got that message and they got it clearly in that meeting that we've all reported on and talked about, they operated accordingly. I mean, that's if you want to boil it down to one thing, and it's impossible to boil it down to one thing, as you said. But that's what it came down to here. But, you know, to kind of rewind and go back to where things started to go sour. I mean, I think that if you put Kristaps and his guys, his brother, and maybe even Andy Miller in a room, and you put Steve Mills and you put Nick people in a room, and you just said, hey, let's have an honest conversation. I think there would be like, you know, 30 or 40 different little things that didn't go exactly right that added up to Kristaps feeling like this wasn't a good place for him and his career going forward. I don't know if there was one moment that anybody would point to that said, well, this is really what happened and person X screwed this up and this is where everything went wrong. I think it was a million little things and ultimately Kristaps came to the conclusion that for him to be where he wanted to be individually and for him to have the team success that he wanted to have in his career, it wasn't going to happen in New York.
So you mentioned Steve Mills. He was unhappy with Phil Jackson. That I get. right? Phil came out essentially and admitted we're at least listening. Whenever 2 years ago, whenever a year and a half ago, whenever that was,
right?
He and Hornacek had some things didn't go great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those guys are gone,
right?
Those guys are now long gone, and he's been hurt for most of that time anyway. So, like, what else? Why is it lingered? Like, the enemies of the Porzingis state are gone.
Mm-hmm.
What is he still mad about? Although the team stinks. Okay, so maybe that's what you're mad about, but why?
Well, I think that part of it is, you know, Phil is gone. But, you know, if you look at a lot of the people who are here, front office and otherwise, they were also here under Phil. So it's not like there was a complete cleansing from one regime to the next. You know, obviously Steve Mills is still here. He was the GM under Phil Jackson. He's the president of the Knicks now. And that's not to say that everything about Kristaps Porzingis' happiness ties back to Steve Mills. I don't think that's the case, but I don't think you could also say that because Phil left, that means that everything was different, because that's also not true. You know, I don't know if there were so many things that happened with Scott Perry and David Fizdale, the two newest faces of this organization, that caused Kristaps to want to leave. I don't think there was. I just don't think that the trust was able to be rebuilt enough to a point where Kristaps felt comfortable.
That's what I heard. I had heard from someone who knows him that in that interim period, the remaining people and the new people took some steps, but not enough.
They did take steps.
Yeah.
Fizdale went
to Latvia, right?
Yeah, flew to Latvia with his wife and spent time with Kristaps. This wasn't about Kristaps, hating the head coach and wanting to leave. I just think it was a 360-degree view of the Knicks that he took, and he just wasn't comfortable with the idea that he was going to put his career in the hands of the organization because, you know, listen, yes, he's young, but relatively speaking, you know, an athlete has a short period of time to really establish themselves and get done what they want to get done in their NBA career. Kristaps knew that. He knows people around the league. He knows organizations that he believes are run well. He saw some things that weren't run well with the Knicks, and he made this decision. And I think
who was his list? Nets, Spurs,
Clippers. Mavericks were not on it.
0% chance the Knicks were ever trading him to the Nets. Like, even people with the Nets were like, we have no shot. It's not going to happen.
No. And so, you know, the Mavs were not on the list. We know that. But I do think also one of the small things that kind of was an underlying issue, he had his own medical people who were helping him rehab with his injury. The team, every NBA team, has its own medical team. So I think inherently there's a place where there can be conflict and miscommunication and chances to ruffle feathers and upset egos on both sides. So, you know, there was, again, a million little things like that where the Knicks and the player didn't fully align.
Isn't that the name of, like, what is surely a bad show, A Million Little Things? A million little pieces.
I've seen an advertisement.
That's
for
like
that
the
show.
Thing that's never trying to be the other thing that's popular. You
this
can tell
us,
how much.
Well,
yeah,
that,
this is us.
Yeah.
Where, like, people are crying all the time.
I've also seen commercials for that. I haven't. Yeah.
All I know about This Is Us is, like, someone died and there was a fire and people are constantly crying.
If you want to talk to me about TV, talk to me about Daniel Tiger. Talk to me about Sesame Street.
I like Daniel Tiger.
Listen.
I was skeptical it was going to be a little too wholesome, not edgy enough for me. I like a little edge. I liked that the Cookie Monster is, like, faintly kind of an addict. Okay? I like, give me a little adult, like a little wink. Little wink to the adults that are watching. Not a lot of winking in Daniel Tiger, but I like it anyway.
You know what? I usually fall asleep to the episodes early in the morning. My daughter's watching on the couch. I'll try to get a little shut eye in, and it turns into a Daniel Tiger marathon in my house most mornings.
Have you read the original Curious George? Like the very first Curious George?
No.
It's disturbing. He goes, the man in the yellow hat goes to Africa and with a net kidnaps a monkey.
Oh my God.
It's like a completely colonialist scheme.
Yeah,
that's like the original sin of the whole series. I don't care how cute he is running around the city, stealing library books and getting into mischief. It's, anyway, enough. Listeners, here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions that you haven't already failed to keep. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. with more than 150,000, you heard that right, 150,000 podcasts, including Oprah's Super Soul Conversations, The Tim Ferriss Show, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, The Nutrition Diva, and yes, even The Low Post and other sports favorites. You can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, how to feel balanced while meditating, even if you're still wondering if the cat's been fed. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can even download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all of that newfound balance you promised yourself in your New Year's resolutions. So start the year off right with podcasts on Spotify. I like what you're saying about Porzingis, because I tweeted this the night of the trade. This trade was about a lot of things, and that's why it's so interesting, right? It's about the draft picks. It's about Dennis Smith. It's about the cap space. It's about all of that. And all of that touches on Porzingis too, particularly the cap space part, which we'll talk about. But I do think on a very fundamental level, the trade was about the Knicks just got tired of him saying he didn't want to be there and sensed it's going to be a broken relationship. I don't know if we're going to be able to fix it. And I do think, and I don't mean to blame him for this, because God, the Knicks have won one playoff series since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's 20 years. They won one playoff series.
Poor fan base.
So I don't blame any player.
No.
I wouldn't blame Emmanuel Mudiay for being like, I can't trust this team.
I'm out.
I demand a trade.
Ship
too.
Me out. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't blame Damian Dotson.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the evidence is there if you're basing it on the recent history of this team.
It's
that things
not
aren't
recent.
Go
it's
well.
Not recent. It's like a third of NBA history.
That's, yes.
The 70s were a long time ago. The 90s were a long time ago.
Right.
But I do think the Knicks were like, all right, you're just whining all the time. Not whining. Whining sounds pejorative. You're unhappy all the time. You voice it a lot. Your people voice it a lot. We're tired of it. We're doing our best. We've actually done a pretty good job, I think, setting up the team for the future. You're a great player. We'd love that future to involve you. You don't want it? We can get a good deal. Like, we're done.
Just a quick aside on that. I mean, we talk about the Phil Jackson era, and then people who worked under Phil still with the team, in particular Steve Mills, those people lived that Carmelo Anthony era where there were some similarities with regard to a guy who loved New York, but for different reasons than Kristaps Porzingis, did not have a good relationship with the organization, and there wasn't full buy-in on Carmelo's end, and, you know, there wasn't a symbiotic relationship there. And I think those people saw how Phil tried to make it work and tried to, particularly in that summer when they traded for Derrick Rose, signed Joakim Noah, tried to make a push with Carmelo Anthony on that roster to build a winner, as opposed to maybe what they should have done, which was continuing to build around Kristaps Porzingis and blow it up in a sense. So I think that recent history of Carmelo may have instructed them here. Hey, let's not try to force the issue. If Kristaps doesn't want to be here, let's do what we have to do, try to get the best return and a trade for him and move forward.
At the same time, if he signs his qualifying offer, if he actually signs his qualifying offer, I'll buy a John Starks t-shirt. John Starks is my least favorite player growing up. I don't know why. I just did not like John Starks. I will buy, like, that is, if that's real, and he's going to turn down, let's just make up a number. The Mavs offer him $120 million.
Yeah, right.
You know what his qualifying offer is, by the way?
Four something?
4.5. Yeah,
four.
Because a lot of people miss this. It was seven. And if you don't meet the quote-unquote starter criteria,
right,
which he did not meet by missing all these games,
yeah,
it drops to what the qualifying offer is for the 15th pick, if you're picked in the top whatever.
Mm-hmm.
4 points. So if you tore your ACL, you've had some other injuries, like a list of them. And you're in your 7 feet two or whatever with a body that, you know, doesn't give me super duper confidence. You're never going to get a foot injury or whatever again.
Right.
You're going to turn down 120, whatever million guaranteed to sign for four. I just don't believe it. I don't care what threats he's issued. I don't think the Knicks believe it. I don't think the Mavericks believe it. I don't believe it. So if he does it, I will buy blue, orange, white. I don't care what color. I will buy a John Starks t-shirt and wear it around my neighborhood.
Knicks fans, mark it down. I don't think it's going to happen either. The interesting thing about the contract discussions is I just wonder how much of Kristaps' decision was informed by any informal conversations about what the Knicks might offer Porzingis and how injury protected that offer would be, what it would look like. And if it wasn't going to be what he thought it would be, does that also inform his decision to want to leave? And I don't know if that was the case or not.
What also could inform his decision is the cap space angle that is connected to this trade. Obviously, the Knicks have now opened up a second max slot. They had like 80% to 90% of one max slot before the trade would have opened it up. Obviously, that was their whole plan. There is the possibility that they got the sense that he wasn't psyched of how aggressively they were going to court bigger names than him. That's possible.
Yeah, I never got that sense. Certainly, it's not outside of the realm of possibility. I never got the sense that that was the case. I could be wrong. I don't think I am. I know he talked about really wanting to be the magnet for top free agents, but I'm sure he also enjoyed being the face of the NBA franchise in the biggest market in the world. So I don't think that was the case, but I guess you can't rule it out.
I don't think – I'm confident after talking to a lot of people, I don't think he was psyched about playing with Durant. I don't know how directly that was verbalized to the Knicks. I'm confident that it wasn't something that was like his plan A. He was super thrilled about it. He wanted to be the face of the franchise. I think that's known. That's fair. Kevin Durant will be the face of the franchise if he comes. That's it. That's decided. There are other guys who, for various reasons, I don't think would be the face of the franchise. Kemba Walker would not be.
Right. You
could argue Kyrie Irving would not be if he were here with Porzingis. It'd be close. Kawhi Leonard is so quiet.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't be.
That even if he's
from
the
marketing perspective,
even if he's the face of the franchise or the best player on the team,
right,
which he would be, he yields the public stage willingly to other people.
Right.
It's by being, and you hear this from people who are in the orbit of superstar free agency this summer. By virtue of being like a silent weirdo, Kawhi has kind of made himself like the ideal running mate for these guys that want to be the, and I don't blame anyone for wanting to be the face of the franchise. These guys are all at the absolute pinnacle of their profession, but he, by seeding the public stage so happily, and think about it. Kyrie is so mad about everything all the time now.
Yeah.
About the coverage of free agency.
I can't knock him about that.
Why?
Video thing.
Oh, the video?
Yeah, because, well, not to get into too big of an aside.
Let's get into an aside.
The thing with that is, like, we, as the media, and I hate you, like, using this broad label as media because we're all individuals and we make individual decisions, but whoever decided to turn this into a big talking point, I don't know who did, who didn't.
I was blissfully.
You were on vacation. You were
not, I was on a
family.
Little 4-day break.
But you saw the video, right?
Saw the video.
So it's based on an amateur lip reading of people thinking that he may have said to Kevin Durant something about two max slots, which who knows if he did or he didn't. So it's based on that. And then we're making these wild assumptions. And then we're looking at this video through the prism of free agency. We have no idea what these guys were talking about. Like if there was audio and we could discern that they were talking about free agency. Okay, then let's have a discussion about free agency while looking at this video. But we have no clue what they're talking about. So that to then view this through the prism of free agency, I can just see where he got frustrated with that particular instance.
I actually think I'm fascinated by Kyrie. I love this outspoken Kyrie.
I love it too.
Because he's right about a lot of things. He's right about that this divides locker rooms. He's absolutely right. He's right that a lot of the coverage is stupid. And ignores basketball. Actually, and I also like.
I think like 80% of the coverage is non-basketball.
And look, KD
depending
has.
Depending on how you want to define coverage.
Yeah. I mean, KD has had some missteps publicly in the last couple of years. I actually kind of admire that he tells the media, hey, the whole point of this is teams are trying to figure out the best way to score points, more points than the other team. Like, this is about a sport. It's about basketball. Do you guys really care to understand, like, what's actually happening when we're playing the game? I respect that. I respect that Kyrie said, you know, I don't know that the degree to which he's actually not on social media, but I like that he said people need to get off their phones. And like, if we're going to have these tensions in a locker room, Kyrie Irving have learned that you can't just live on your phone and read a quote from one of your teammates and internalize a particular meaning of that quote that may be out of context or may not be accurate, but because you don't talk to that person face to face about it, you just have this year of tension. You actually have to speak to people. Mm-hmm. That's what a revelation that it helps to talk to people, but like sometimes it's much easier not to, and he's right about that.
I wonder if, does he do that though with, in that Celtic locker room? Like when he says publicly, like, you know, we have young guys who, I forget exactly what he said.
You know, and I think
like, is he saying that also to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? Like, is he also having those conversations? If he is, that's great, and I think that's fantastic leadership. I would just hope that if he's going to make that point, he's also doing it himself.
Now, this last one, I actually didn't think was that explosive when I believe he said to Rachel Nichols, the great Rachel Nichols, we have a bunch of guys. We have young guys in the locker room who think they can do more than they're doing.
Yeah, I don't think that's explosive either. I just think explain it to them too. If you're gonna, because they could read that quote on social media and misinterpret it in the way that you're describing.
I think it was misinterpreted as him saying we have a bunch of young guys who think they're better than they are, which is not what he said.
Yeah, he didn't say that.
What he said was we have a lot of good players, and not everyone gets to do everything they want. And these guys think they can do more. And he didn't say they're wrong.
Right.
He actually kind of implied that they're right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tough shit of being on a great team.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, you know that getting tickets to sporting events for friends and visitors used to stress me out. There were too many sites to check on the secondary market. Am I getting a good deal? Am I getting the best deal I can get? What if there's a better seat and I just forgot? Well, guess what? SeatGeek has solved all of those problems for you. It pulls millions of tickets into one place. Only have to visit SeatGeek and that's it. And you can easily find the best seat you want for the price you're willing to pay. They have a super easy to use color-coded system. Green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It's very interactive and easy to see where your seat is, whether it's obstructed, unobstructed, all of that. And best of all, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. SeatGeek should be your go-to ticket source for everything, sports, concerts, Broadway shows, theater, comedy, all of it. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. That's promo code LOW. Bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. Anyway, I don't remember what I was going to say about Kyrie now. Oh.
We were talking about free agents, how Kawhi is attractive because he would see the stage, and they were talking about Kyrie and what he would do.
The one thing I'll take issue with Kyrie is this idea that, you know, he kind of sniffed at the idea brought up by one of the reporters that, you know, people are doing this because fans are interested. Oh, you do this for the fans? No, you do it for the clicks. You do it for the clicks. You don't do it for the fans. First of all, those things are to some degree indistinguishable.
Of course.
Second of all, yes, the fans are super interested in whether Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are going to play together. You know why? Because you play basketball. And in basketball, you need two or three superstars to win a title, and you guys are superstars. Tough. Like, that's of immense fan interest. It would be dereliction of duty for media people to not investigate that possibility.
Of course. Your job as a reporter is to serve fan interest to a large degree, and that's where the fan interest is right now. So you have to ask those kinds of questions. The questions stemming from that video, you know, we can agree or disagree on whether Kyrie was right there. But in general, questions about free agency are going to be asked. And that's just a part of the deal if you're Kyrie Irving and you're Kevin Durant. And we were talking about Kristaps. I always got the impression that he would have welcomed Kyrie and been excited about Kyrie. So, I don't know about the KD stuff, but particularly with Kyrie, I always thought that he would look forward to sharing the court with him. And just one other quick thing on Kristaps. I mean, it was portrayed in some places in the aftermath of the trade that his brother and his agent, Giannis Porzingis, was kind of really guiding him. And it was almost portrayed as if Giannis was kind of like pulling the strings and Kristaps was a puppet. That, to me, my read of the situation was not the case at all. Kristaps is a big boy. Old enough to make his own decisions, certainly wouldn't make a decision like this, like leaving the Knicks, leaving New York, if he didn't feel fully invested in that decision. So the idea that Giannis was kind of a mastermind behind this whole thing, to me, is inaccurate.
I actually kind of, I 100% agree. I kind of found it refreshing that a European player had his relative tagged as the demon, because usually that is my least favorite and most uncomfortable thing about what happens to African American players. It's always the uncle. It's always it's the family member whispering in Kawhi Leonard's ear. It's Uncle Dennis. It's always some sort of other person where it's like, no, Kawhi Leonard decided he didn't want to play for the Spurs anymore because of whatever.
Right.
It's not because he's not just some sort of vessel, like empty vessel that his family members are manipulating. And teams speak this language too. Teams are, because they're afraid to blame players. They don't want to blame their own players. They want to blame other forces that are manipulating the players. No, the players, all of them are, have huge agency in all these decisions. And in fact, that's what we're seeing at the highest level.
And it's also, I think, easier for teams sometimes, instead of taking at face value why a player left, what his issues were with our program, it's easier for the team to deflect and say, oh, it was really the family member that was getting in his ear and kind of corrupted him and caused him to want to leave. I think that a healthy thing to do, if I'm the Knicks, like, I'm asking myself, did Kristaps have any valid points about what wasn't working with our organization? Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but at least do an evaluation and kind of look in the mirror and see if anything that he said causes you to change how you operate. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But instead of just fully dismissing it, I think the healthier approach is to take a hard look at the way you're running things.
Well, if there's anything we know about the James Dolan era, it's that it is marked by intense self-reflection, never blaming others for anything. So I'm sure that that was happening. Listeners, if you didn't already know, and I don't blame you, I'm out of touch. The NBA is wild, wild, and Hulu has all the action. They've even partnered with guys like Joel Embiid and Damian Lillard, fringe MVP candidates, who are doing some pretty wild things for Hulu that you just have to check out. Now that Hulu has live sports, I wouldn't blame anybody for getting on board. If you've been late to Hulu, now's the time. A bunch of people are ditching their cable, and who can blame them when you can watch all the live games you want on Hulu Plus Live TV? It has the same channels as cable. For all you fogies like me, the same channels that you know. For only $45, watch your favorite teams and the biggest games all season long on Hulu Plus Live TV. Again, no cable required. Also, by virtue of being a quiet weirdo, Kawhi has had quite a quiet 18 months in terms of, there have been very few flare-ups of dramatic or tense media coverage, considering I don't know what the proper terminology, he stopped playing for the Spurs,
right?
The A organization of the whole league, and is now a free agent, just like KD and Kawhi, or KD and Kyrie, who constantly find themselves amid public drama.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been much with Kawhi, and it's just because he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Nobody made Kyrie say in front of fans and television cameras, if you'll have me, I plan on resigning.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody made him say X months later, ask me on July 1st, I don't know anybody. Kawhi just says nothing.
Yeah.
And when you're a complete blank slate and you say nothing, there's just nothing to do.
Except no one's going to bother you.
Except say, yeah, well, he's a free agent, I guess we'll see.
Right. Right, and I'm sure that works for him, and I'm sure the Toronto Raptors appreciate that they're not dealing with these extraneous issues, and they're just dealing with basketball fit, and they'll deal with everything else when it comes. It's interesting. I wonder, you know, just being in this market, if Kawhi was a New York Knick and was entering free agency and the Knicks had given up whatever they would have had to give up to trade for him, would it be the same? I mean, would guys be asking him every day about his free agency, or would he be able to kind of avoid that the way he's avoided it in Toronto? It's just a fascinating dynamic of this market and the media in this market.
Is the New York media really that bad?
No.
I think that's like a myth.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people. I don't find... There was a period of time where the Knicks beat was the most miserable beat. Like, the people on it were just miserable.
Has that ended?
Maybe not.
I think we're still in the midst of that golden era of the Knicks beat.
But this is at least this year, it's because of the 17 game. It's just because of, like, I'm just watching too much Alonzo Trier. There's just too much, like.
I'm an Alonzo Trier guy, so
no,
I
he's
pretty, go there.
He's actually been pretty good, but it's like, there's like, Noah Vonleh just posted up like seven times in a row. Like, okay.
Just losing basketball. And, yeah, there hasn't been the off-the-court misery, the off-the-court drama. I mean, Kristaps trade aside, because that was major. You know, I just go back to that year where we had Charles Oakley and Jim Dolan, and we had Derrick Rose going AWOL, and we had Phil Jackson taking veiled shots at Carmelo.
The media
and that was like within 4 weeks.
And the media
crazy.
Didn't do any of that.
No.
It's not the media's fault that the Knicks can't get out of their own way.
Right. We just report on what happens. And I think I agree with you. It is it's a mislabel to say the New York media is tougher than other markets. I think there's just more of us. And, you know, that inherent in that is competition among outlets. But
like I keep hearing that, like, you know, Kevin Durant won't be able to handle the New York. Look how sensitive he is. Won't be able to handle the New York media. Carmelo Anthony came here and won a playoff series. One. He was like a hero. It wasn't like Carmelo was like constant. Now, there was some stuff with Phil, and there was some when the Jeremy Lin stuff happened, and he didn't seem particularly thrilled with Jeremy Lin's ascension.
Mm-hmm.
There was some tension there, but it's not like Carmelo.
D'Antoni.
Yeah, and so I guess that even proves my point. Like, there was stuff. It's not like Carmelo Anthony got hammered. People, like, the media hated Carmelo. He's a beloved figure.
Yeah. Yeah, to peel back the curtain a little bit, he was great with us, and I think that it shouldn't really inform the coverage, but I think to a degree it does because he stood there, answered questions whenever we had them, and maybe that influences the way he gets covered a little bit. But anyway,
So what happened? So that day, there's a meeting. The January 31, I think, there's a meeting.
Yeah.
Who's at the meeting and how long does it last? And is it over already by the time they walk in the door? Like, it's just very, like, why is the meeting happening that day? Why is it not happening 3 months before? I just don't understand what happened.
Well, I think that meeting happening that day, you know, people say that Kristaps called the meeting. My guess, though, is that he had an idea because his people, Giannis and everybody knows when the Knicks are having discussions with these other teams about potential trades of Kristaps, they get wind of it. So I think they knew that the Knicks were having, under the table back channel conversations about potential Porzingis trades and the meeting was called. And I don't know.
That's interesting.
I don't know exactly who was in the room. I do know that Giannis Porzingis was in there. Obviously Kristaps was in there. No, Steve Mills was in there. I know Scott Perry was in there. And I know this meeting did not last long. It was definitely less than 5 minutes. Kristaps said something. Giannis said something. And I didn't get the sense that there was a dramatic attempt by Steve Mills or Scott Perry, whoever on the Knicks side, to say, Kristaps, please stay. Like, we want to make this right. Let's mend fences. Let's sit here for 3 hours, however long it takes. Let's get on the same page. I didn't get the sense that that was the give and take. I got the sense that they expressed that they weren't going to sign a long-term deal or didn't want to be here. And then the Knicks acted accordingly and traded him, you know, however long it was later. It wasn't long after the meeting that they got a deal done.
So, and then there was a clash of narratives, if you will, between reporting that there were teams that were caught off guard. Mm-hmm. Say, oh my God, we would have bid if we had known. And then I believe Scott Perry during the press conference said, you know, we had 8 or 9 teams.
Right.
Who's right? Those two things, I guess there are enough teams that both those things could be correct. I don't really think that though.
Well, I don't question the Knicks saying publicly that they had several offers on the table, 8, 10, whatever the number was, because they were having conversations with teams, again, prior to this Kristaps meeting, because they knew that Kristaps was unhappy and they had the sense that things could come to a head, so they were prepared for it, which in my mind is a smart way to operate. But I did hear from several people after the trade that there were multiple teams that said, hey, we were ready to make an offer. Like, we wanted to make an offer and we couldn't make an offer because they pulled the trigger on the Mavs deal so quickly. Now, the Knicks loved the trade that they made because it accomplished what they wanted to accomplish, which was opening up the cap space that you mentioned, getting the future first round picks and getting a player in Dennis Smith Jr. that fits kind of that paradigm. They're looking for, you know, former first round picks that for whatever reason didn't work out with their first team.
So, you know, it would be great for them to get a first round pick who did work out for the Knicks. That would be amazing.
They've had a couple and they just haven't re-signed them. But anyway, I don't know if those teams that wanted to put an offer on the table for Kristaps could have checked off the boxes that the Knicks were looking for with regards to future pick, young player, cap space. Who knows? But could you have taken those calls and then maybe going back to Dallas and said, hey, we got a call from Team X and Team Y. we're looking for a little more to get this deal done, and maybe you get Dallas to throw something else in. I don't know. I just think that, you know, given the amount of time between when the trade happened and the trade deadline, maybe there was an opportunity to do more negotiating there. But, you know, the Knicks say that they love the return that they got in this deal, and we'll see what happens this summer with the Knicks, with free agency, what they do with that cap space. We'll also see what happens with Kristaps Porzingis, how he comes back in Dallas. Does he stay in Dallas, number one? Does he return to that elite level that he showed often in New York in his brief career with the Knicks?
I hope so, because I'm super bullish on him. I think he's a star player. I don't think he's the number one offensive orchestrator or option on a championship team, because that's very hard for any big man to be. I kind of think of him as like a big man Paul George, like a 1.5, but you need someone who handles the ball and initiates possessions, and from there he can be a pseudo alpha and kill it on defense. When something like that happens, when there's a split narrative, you just have to sort of fall back on who do I trust.
Yes.
And some of these people at teams who said, hey, we would have liked to have made an offer we didn't know, are people I've known for years and years and years, and I have a track record of telling me the truth, mm-hmm. even when it's inconvenient for their team.
Mm-hmm.
So I trust them.
Mm-hmm.
I also 100% believe the Knicks, that they did have other offers on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe both things can be true. But there were definitely teams who I believe did not know that he was imminently available and would have liked to have known. But I also agree with your point that I don't think the Knicks are getting a better trade. They got everything they wanted. Even, like, what else could Dallas have thrown in? They're not throwing in a third first.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
They have no other player.
Right. The only thing would be an extra pick from a Dallas perspective.
Give me a second. You know, it's you're not getting much more.
Right.
And by the way, Porzingis is not going to be the face of the Dallas Mavericks.
It's going to be Luka.
That's it.
You think? Yeah. I mean, unless something changes, and I don't know. I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic out there. But those two playing together, and we'll see who they add. If Kristaps again returns to that level that he showed in New York, it's going to be interesting to see how Dallas does over the next 10 years or so with these two, and how the Knicks do with whatever happens this summer moving forward with them. And, you know, you can't judge this trade today.
No, you need to grade it immediately. God bless Kevin Pelton. That's so hard to do. I agree.
And I love everything he writes.
I read them all.
Yeah.
It could be a win-win. It could be a win-win. It won't be a win. No one will – well, we'll see how Oladipo comes back. But that OKC-Indiana trade is going to go down as like the – epitome of a win-win trade.
Yeah, it's amazing how that worked out.
And we'll see what happens with Sabonis, too, if he's in their long-term plans and all that.
Was that a little hint?
No, I've said before, I think they're going to have to trade one of Turner and Sabonis. I don't think, given the salaries that they're going to command, that they can play them enough together to justify paying them both approximately 20. I know Miles makes 18, but I think Sabonis wants a lot, too. Well, let's talk about the other the elephant in the room, which is that Bill Simmons reported over the weekend that I believe he said it's go time, and that James Dolan is ready to sell the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
What was your reaction to that?
Initially, I just, you know, your first reaction is, let me find out what I can find out, because that's your job. And, you know, you reach out to people, and I think there was, at least on my end, the people that I spoke with, there was a little bit of confusion because, you know, publicly the Madison Square Garden company had announced that they were seeking to split off the sports company with the entertainment company. And part of that transaction, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, was potentially selling small pieces of the Knicks and Rangers to raise capital for the entertainment company. So I thought that maybe it was people bidding on smaller pieces of the team and not a controlling interest of the team. Although some people that I spoke with claimed that, yes, you know, we're aware of this, and we're looking to, one person said we're looking to put a bid in for a controlling interest. And then MSG comes out and denies it pretty emphatically.
Too emphatically for my taste.
Okay. Fair.
Too emphatically.
I think, you know, you have to put out that denial, because a news item like that has the potential to impact stock prices, and that affects your...
They will deny it until he sells the team. Until the day he sells the team, if and when that ever comes, they will deny it.
Right. Didn't we see that with the Nets, where there was denial until Prokhorov sold 49%
or
whatever it was?
Yeah.
So what was your read on? I know you were away when it happened, but what did you... take away from it.
So there has been an escalated amount of smoke around this for the last 6 weeks. Smoke.
Mm-hmm. Smoke. I think even longer than that. But, yeah.
But for me, I started hearing stuff 6 or 8 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, my hands were tied. I was told you can't report on this. You can't follow it up. That's it. Now, I said smoke. What I'm confident that there is smoke. And even James Dolan, if you read Ian O'Connor's huge interview piece with James Dolan, said, now this is a couple months ago whenever this came out, you have a responsibility to your shareholders. That's number one, which he means if someone offers me X billion dollars, whatever the number I want is, and it's been rumored to be five, and I believe that rumor is true, I have to listen. Now, he has to say that. He has a fiduciary responsibility to his shareholders.
Of course.
Then he says, no one has come through with a bona fide offer. You hear numbers all the time. I think people have sent feelers out, but never any that were pursued. That essentially is Jim Dolan publicly saying the smoke that I've heard for the last 8 weeks. I think, here's what I think. I think bidders have gotten organized. That doesn't necessarily mean anything's happening. That just means people, because the Knicks are going to cost a ton of money,
right,
are trying to get some rich friends together or trying to find one of the 50 people in the U.S. who can actually plunk down whatever billion dollars it is. Bidders have gotten organized. That doesn't mean that James Dolan has told them to get organized. That doesn't mean that James Dolan's attorneys have told them to get organized. That doesn't mean that James Dolan's anyone has said the Knicks are for sale. I'm listening.
Right.
It means those people, for whatever reason, have gotten the impression that they should get organized and are doing so. Now, I will also say that over the last 3 weeks, including since Simmons said that, the momentum of that organizing seems to have slowed a little bit. And there is a huge faction of the ultra wealthy or the ultra connected or both who think this is ultimately fake.
Mm-hmm.
Who think that he won't sell, or he'll only sell at a price point that is totally unrealistic, mm-hmm. that he does not want to sell, despite the fact that it seems to be miserable for him to own the Knicks and get harassed by fans every time he turns around because the Knicks have won one playoff series in the last 20 years. And who also think, and now this is where you tie all these threads together and it becomes very interesting, which is, well, why would he sell? If in 4.5 months he is going to be the hero who brings in Kevin Durant, free agent X, and a top whatever pick that is either a good player or someone that is something that is traded for yet another good player, why would he get out if the narrative about his ownership can change a 180 in the span of 5 days in July?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, what if some of those star players would rather the Knicks have a different owner? I don't know that that's true. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the people who are trying to piece together the game theory of all of these strands,
right,
are asking those sorts of questions. That's as far as I'm comfortable going. And James Dolan, by saying publicly, I think people have sent feelers out, but never any that were pursued, is essentially, and yeah, the feelers are around that $5 billion number, but those things, it's like a stock price. It's only important if you're going to buy and sell. And he also says his family doesn't want to sell, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I just know, I think that what I just said about people getting organized and what James Dolan told Ian O'Connor X months ago are not contradictory at all.
No. And there's a lot there that points to maybe at some point in the future this happening. Just two things based on what you said. One thing that came to mind, you talked about players maybe being more willing to come to the Knicks if there were another owner. I the players that I've dealt with over the years in that locker room, specifically Tyson Chandler, Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony, those guys love James Dolan. And, I'm not saying that to defend his actions or what's happened and hasn't happened with the team during his ownership, but the players that have been here, the big name Knicks that have been here, and nothing but good things to say about him. And maybe part of the reason is because he is, paying them handsomely. But the what they've said hasn't matched with the narrative, the public narrative about all the missteps and the ugly warts on Dolan's ownership. The other thing is, you know, analysts, guys who study MSG and who day in and day out look at the inner finances of the company, they see Dolan as being super, super passionate about the entertainment space, this other space of the company that's being spun off or will be spun off at some point. And they see him as seeing the sports piece as maybe not having the immense value that other people see, that, you know, people assume that these team valuations are going to continue to skyrocket. I don't think that he sees it that way. At least that's how analysts view it. So maybe he sees this as a way to go into that entertainment space with more money. And one analyst said that he's when he looks at his legacy, he's more concerned with being a disruptor in that entertainment space and being known as that, and not caring as much about his legacy with these sports teams because it's already so solid. So those are the two things that come to mind when you talked about what you know with regards to the sale.
And that's all I know. I can't go any further than that. I can't go as far as Bill did. Maybe Bill knows stuff that I don't know. Bill probably does know stuff that I don't know. Right. I can only go as far as what I said.
Listen, I know your ESPN contract. Have you put a bid in for the Knicks?
So this is part of the problem, that the Knicks are, that anyone who wants the Knicks to be sold is going to, let's just make it up. This is you and me making it up. This is not sourced information. It's not like Windhorse. This is not sourced information. Right. Let's say the price for the Knicks end up being $4 billion, yeah. Not five, four.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the NBA has a rule you can only borrow $325 million against your team or against the team you're going to buy. They also have a rule that every minority owner, and this is there can only be 25 minority owners, I think, now, and everyone has to own at least 1% of the team. And that happened because the Bucks have like 9,000 owners who own nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So 1% of $4 billion is, I think, $40 million. It's some huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you own 1% of the team, you know what you get? Nothing.
Yeah.
You get some seats at some games.
Right.
You might not even get to sit courtside at MSG if you own 1% of the team. You don't get to go to Board of Governors meetings. You don't get to sit in on trade calls. You don't get to go to you don't get to be in the draft war room.
Right.
You get nothing. You get to sell that 1% at some point for more than it's worth. It is, James Dolan says in his interview with Ian O'Connor, sometimes the prices don't, you know, this is not a business that necessarily is just the value is rising exponentially all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd have to, now prospective buyers can borrow against other things. Like I believe Tillman Fertitta issued bonds and borrowed against his restaurant empire, to purchase the Rockets.
And that's not against the rules.
No, you can take out loans from banks. You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only borrow $325 million against your team via the NBA's loan facility.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else you borrow is you're leveraging yourself. You're exposing yourself. That's all your personal stuff. And so people, even rich guys, super duper rich guys, are like, I don't have enough money to buy the Knicks.
Right.
And I'm like, well, can't you just take out a loan for where you find financing? They don't want necessarily to expose themselves in that way. They say, well, the most you can get is $325 million. So you're going to have to find, you may have to find someone who is literally going to be like, if the price is the fake $4 billion that we just made up,
mm-hmm.
you might have to find someone who can literally, who can do what Steve Ballmer did.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, here, you want this amount? Oh, I literally have it right here. Here it is. which is, there are not
many people on this earth.
And there just aren't that many. And there aren't that many who are willing to pay $40 million to get nothing.
Right.
To give your, so it's if the Knicks ever actually got for sale, it would be fascinating to see how it would work and who the pool of buyers would be.
Mm-hmm. So that's a major hurdle. And there's, and the idea of buying 1%, it's just a vanity play, right? Because as you said, you're not getting access to behind the scenes team goings on. All it is an investment and maybe a couple seats at the Garden. So to put together that group is certainly a challenge. Brings to mind that George Steinbrenner, when he purchased the Yankees, I guess a couple years after he purchased the Yankees, one of his partners, I guess he had a bunch of partners that invested with him. He said, there's nothing more silent than being a silent partner of George Steinbrenner. So I guess you have to be willing to kind of cede the stage to a main owner whoever that might be. And yeah, I don't think we're anywhere near a full sale.
No, and that's what we've made clear. All I said was there are loose notions of bidders.
Yeah.
Loosely organizing because they have been given the loose impression by something that maybe it's time to loosely organize. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. And we know because it's been stated publicly that the team, Dolan is open to selling small pieces of the team to create capital for that entertainment space. So that's it. That's all we have.
Now, given what else the Knicks have happening this summer, I mean, I don't know. And there, by the way, the thing I said about maybe these star players don't want to play for Dolan or would prefer a different owner, I have no idea if that's true. I also know that there are people who think that players actually want stable ownership and that rumors of a potential Knicks sale would be designed to make the Knicks appear as if they are unstable. So I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, this is, and again, this is just now people opining.
Yeah.
Once they hear Bill say what he says on his podcast, people are just opining. But all of this put together, all of this noise, and all this has to be the most important summer in the history of the franchise, right? I mean, I just don't think it's. They were not getting LeBron in 2010,
right? They thought that they had a chance, but I think this is the Porzingis trade and what you had to do, what you traded to create the cap space for two max players. Yes, to me, this absolutely sets up as I don't want to say the one of the most important summers in franchise history. The interesting thing to me is if the Knicks don't land Kevin Durant, if they don't land Kyrie Irving, if they don't get their top targets, what do they do then? Do they punt the summer? Do they wait for 2020, which I think would be a logical move? The thing that I don't know is the fan reaction if they strike out this summer. Would it be too much? Would the fan base be in hysterics if they didn't land one of these top guys and they said, listen, we're going to hold on to our space.
We're not signing Chris Middleton and Kemba Walker.
Exactly, which to me would be the right move for this team just to wait if you don't get your top targets. But how does that play publicly given that you traded the face of your franchise, a player that so many Knicks fans held in such high esteem and had such hope for to create this cap space? If you get nothing, how does that play?
Yeah, this is the most important moment for the team since they drafted Ewing. I think it's easy, and you see these teams that have cap space and are and there's, you know, there's a million of them this summer, including both New York and LA teams. You know, they get all the media coverage that comes with having cap space, and they're excited about it. They're confident, and then as we get closer, you begin to have them whisper to you, hey, look, if we strike out, like we got draft picks,
we're okay.
We got, you know, yeah. We can just roll it over to 2020, we're okay. But the 2020 free agent class is not good.
Mm-hmm.
The 2021 free agent class is, we can, now Anthony Davis can change all this if he signs 1-year contracts, right? Like, you know,
right.
Kevin Durant can change all this if he signs Kyrie Irving. If these guys sign 1+1 or whatever, and then these years get,
then the class gets better.
More powerful. Yeah. But, you know, 2020 is not a great class. 2021, you're looking at Bradley Beal is maybe the best sweet spot unrestricted free agent on the market. Now, you also have Paul George that summer, 2021.
At what age?
31.
Okay.
Damian Lillard, 31. Now, he might be eligible for an extension of some kind. He could get Supermax extended, I believe, this summer if he makes All-NBA. LeBron is a free agent again that summer. Rudy Gobert at age 29. I don't think anyone is going crazy. I mean, as great as Rudy Gobert is.
Listen, Knicks fans will tell you Mitchell Robinson will be.
I'll tell you, Mitchell Robinson, he was going to appear in 10 things a month ago.
Yeah.
And the clip was going to be in 10 seconds the promise and peril of Mitchell Robinson because it was going to be like
a foul.
Incredible block shot and then chases a second one that he has absolutely no chance to get. His guy gets an offensive rebound and he fouls him.
Oh, yeah.
And you know
yeah.
what? I didn't include it because other things happened. And
yeah.
since then, his fouls are down.
Yes.
His judgment is even better than it was. That dude does special stuff on defense.
Really does.
And if he can chill a little bit and find the right balance of not chasing every block shot in the world and
yeah.
boxing out better and not fouling, like he does, the Knicks are right. He does have potential to be a special defensive
yeah,
player.
They're very high on him, and credit to Scott Perry and the scouts and front office for getting Mitchell where they got him. And listen, this is a good test, I think, for the Knicks player development program. You know, they've talked a lot about it. They obviously brought in David Fizdale, a coach who has a long
successful history with player development. His staff, a lot of them are player development guys. So what do they do with Mitchell Robinson? What can you turn a player who has so much raw potential into? It's just going to be one of the fascinating things to keep an eye on with the franchise moving forward. But to your previous point, yes, the Knicks, if they strike out this summer, they can say, okay, we're going to wait. We're not going to sign the wrong guys and tie ourselves into bad contracts like we've done in the past. Eventually, you have to spend that money. You have to do something productive with that money. Does it happen in 2020? Does it happen in 2021? Eventually, you have to say to your fan base, this is what we traded Kristaps Porzingis for. This is what we did with our cap space. And it's just going to be one of those things that if they don't do it this summer, just hangs over the franchise for at least another 12 months.
And you can name other names. Like, well, we'll see what happens with DeMarcus Cousins, right? Like, we don't know. But you could name Gordon Hayward if he's healthy and productive again, won't be a free agent that summer. But the rest of the names, like, people will name Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, blah, blah. Those guys are restricted. You're not getting those guys. Like, the star refree, Ben Simmons is, I believe, a year earlier than we're talking about. He's 2020. You're not getting those guys.
No.
Lauri Markkanen, you're not getting them.
No, they're going to stay. You would think that they stay with their home franchises.
And even the qualifying offer threat, if you offer the player a maximum qualifying offer, by rule, every other offer sheet coming back from another team has to be at least three seasons. So, like, and then you just match that. Like, there's just no way you're getting these guys.
You have total control, which the Knicks had with Porzingis.
Yeah. So. I think the Knicks have actually done a pretty good job collecting some interesting players. I think that Porzingis trade, once you got over the initial shock of it, and there's a natural emotional attachment Knicks fans had to Porzingis as the best homegrown player since Ewing.
Mm-hmm.
In the light of day a month later, that trade looks like a pretty good trade for the Knicks, and maybe a pretty good trade for Dallas, too. Like, I think they've done a nice job overall.
Given all the factors at play, I would agree with you. You know, we said it before, you have to wait a couple of years to really see what happens on both sides before you fully analyze the deal. But given what came back on both ends, yeah, it seemed to make sense for both sides.
All that said, this summer is just monstrous for them. It's just now you can say it's not monstrous for all the reasons we just said about cap space and all of these assets. You then get yourself in the trade game, right? Like, you nailed a couple of Dallas picks. You've got a couple of interesting players. Now all of a sudden we have ammo. We have our own pick that's going to be a very high pick. Maybe it's Zion Williamson. Who knows? We have ammo to get AD or whoever the next. That's great. A lot of other teams have ammo, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you get a star free agent to sign a piece of paper that says, I'm going to be on your team for 3 or 4 years, you can't beat security like that.
Right. And you've heard, I mean, we've all heard the Kevin Durant stuff, and I think that, you know, obviously, it's obvious the people around him see New York as a potential destination if he does leave Golden State. We all know that. And there are people, you know, not people who talk to Kevin Durant every day, so I don't want to misstate it, but there are kind of people who are 2 degrees removed who would be surprised if, given everything that they've heard, if he doesn't end up in New York. But also, you remember Kevin's free agency when he left for Golden State. I think, you know, people around him said he changed his mind, like, pretty regularly about what he wanted to do, which is totally normal. So even if the Knicks...
I changed my mind about what I want to have for lunch.
Exactly. So even
from 10:30 to 10:55, I'm having different ideas.
Right, and that's not even a life-changing decision. So, you know, the Knicks, I think there are people in the organization that feel good about their chances with Kevin Durant, and they obviously have a reason to feel good about it. But we're sitting here in late February. So many things can change, including Kevin Durant changing his mind between now and July 1. And, you know, we saw that with his past free agency. So, you know, you can feel good about it today. But as you said, you have to get the player to sign that piece of paper. And that's a huge hurdle. And it doesn't get any bigger than this summer for the Knicks in their front office.
And as a New Yorker, I would love the Knicks to be good. Love it. Like, give me a home playoff series. Give me good basketball in my backyard. Like, the Nets might make the playoffs this year. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, as a beat guy, I'm impartial, but I do. I'll say it. I miss covering good basketball.
That doesn't make it. That's not partial. That's just like you. Like, if I can see playoff games, if I can see, remember they were in the second round.
It was fun.
Like, if I can go to second round games by getting on a subway for 20 minutes and then go see my family afterwards,
yeah, you would love that.
Instead of going to
Dallas, nothing. Instead of going far, it doesn't matter where it is. It could be L.A. It could be anywhere. It could be all.
Waking up at home versus telling your wife and your beautiful daughter that you have to skip town for a few days.
Anyway, you have an endlessly fascinating job chronicling these guys. Just don't get banned from any press conferences or anything like that.
What a disaster!
Yeah, that's not a good look. It's a bad look, actually. All right. Ian Begley, your coverage is just outstanding all the time. You know everything that's going on there. Everyone should read and listen to everything you do. Thank you for lending me a bit of your time here, my friend.
I appreciate you, Zach. Thanks very much.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.